Welcome to Day Zero Update for January 19th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jan Red Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news this week as a bunch of things have happened. Got some games getting announced.
Yep.
A handful of them. Some pretty cool things there. A lot of industry news happened, both good and bad. And Nintendo finally. Now, let's say a teaser trailer of what their Switch 2 is going to look like.
Yeah.
And it was a huge surprise.
Yep.
But yeah, before we get to that stuff, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I have been playing some Donkey Kong Country Returns HD.
Mm-hmm.
That just came out on the Switch a couple days ago. I think I'm in the second world. And it's been good so far. I never played the original on the Wii or the 3DS sort of remaster or whatever. This essentially be the 3DS version, but maybe with improved visuals over that. And yeah, it controls very well so far. It has a lot of the similarities with what the original Donkey Kong Country game had, in terms of, you know, lots of rolls and smacking the ground and jumping on enemies and that kind of stuff,
yeah.
With more of a focus on things like doing the roll jumps to kind of make it a little more tricky, all that kind of stuff. So the one weird thing they have here is this blow mechanic that has you... essentially like blown on dandelions or something, that some sort of flower. There's a few different kinds I've seen so far that can drop, you know, bananas or banana coins or puzzle pieces, maybe even a life balloon.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. It's just kind of a weird thing to include to like slow things down. But yeah, like in the original games, you're mainly trying to play through these stages and get all of the puzzle pieces and, you know, survive and get to the end. Which the puzzle pieces, they do a good job of hiding things. There's been stages where I've found them all and others where I get through and I have just like one and I'm like, how the hell do they hide all these things? They usually either use, you know, foliage in the environment to conceal secret areas, that kind of stuff, or you just miss stuff as you're going. It's been pretty fun, though, kind of both pretty easy as well as having some areas where it gets very hard. It's easy in that you are constantly getting new lives through the you know, collecting 100 bananas as it gets. In a lot of areas, you know, either single bananas or batches of bananas that get that counter filled up pretty quickly. And even if you lose lives, it respawns all the bananas around you. So
yep.
You can easily kind of go back a bit if you know where some good bananas are at. Or, you know, sometimes I had one stage where the barrel where I could get Diddy Kong back was just a little bit back. So I just kept going there and in the process had like 20, 30 bananas I could pick up along the way. That made it pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
Also build like in the jumping mechanics. If you jump on enemies, you know, consecutively without landing on the ground.
Yeah.
And coins and leading to a life balloon coming out. So there were some challenge stages where that was like a way that I was basically getting a life balloon pretty easily in this section, and then also getting bananas and getting lives on top of that, though also accrued a ton of banana coins, which you can spend in the shop on life balloons and various, you know, numbers for what you need. I have like over 200 right now, and those are like 10, I think, for 7 lives, and I bought, you know, a few of them. So I'm basically never really going to run out of lives, so they really shouldn't have had lives in this game because it's super easy to refill your lives and all that. And there's not really much interesting stuff to buy in the shop outside of like a key that you can use to essentially open up a path early around the current world map. So you can easily just play the stages in the order that they have them set up, and you'll eventually get to that stage. But yeah, it's not a hard game to get through. It's just a matter of persistence and working your way through tough areas. So yeah, it's one of those kind of games. It does have co-op to can play with the second player. I assume they play as Diddy, but I've not done that yet. I believe it has the extra stages that the 3DS version had, so got a little bit of extra there. But I would say probably ultimately get it on sale, because charging $60 for a 3DS game is not really what I would say is a good deal on this. It seems like the load times are longer from what people were saying. They do feel long, but I don't know how they compare to either of the original versions. But it's definitely, you see Diddy and Donkey Kong running across the screen, and you assume that it takes just one run to load up, but no, it takes like two and a half, three times to load into a stage or out of a stage, and it's like, this is a little long. It's not as bad as the way some people are making it out to be, but it is definitely on the long side for loads, especially when it's not exactly like it's a hugely intensive game. You know, it's all side-scrolling stages, that kind of stuff, versus, say, open world or anything like that. But yeah, it's a good game. It's just got some pricing issues and a little bit of issues with the load times and some of that stuff, being both on the easy and challenging side at times. But yeah, it's a good game. If you have not played this one before, or have played the other, you know, Donkey Kong Country games, because you can definitely tell like Tropical Freeze is from the Wii U, because it's just a more graphically satisfying game. It looks really nice and all that, and it also has great music. Whereas this version, I wouldn't say has great music. There are some tracks that are good, but a lot of it just feels like it's building up to better music, but never gets there. But yeah, that's a Donkey Kong Country Returns HD. I got it with the vouchers, so it was $50 instead of $60. So I'll probably be getting Xenoblade Chronicles X as a result. So there'll be that. For other stuff I've been playing some older games. Played a bunch of Just Cause 2, put probably good 10, 12 hours into that now. At this this is the PC version, which took a little bit of work to get it working properly. Because initially it was installed on my G drive, but it was not loading. It would just pull up the screens for as it was loading and just stay there. Never progress until I moved it to the C drive, and then it finally worked. That's how you can tell it's kind of an older PC game when it's not too happy with being on anything but the C drive. And then I had it crashing whenever things would start getting hectic, which concerning the nature of that game, it was pretty easy to cause it to crash fairly often. But I found a thread in the Steam discussion forums. It was mentioning one of the options that you needed to turn off that would most likely fix it, which is cool. That managed to seemingly solve the issue. Maybe the only other issue really is that it doesn't work on a Steam Deck, at least without a ton of work. And I was thinking about it, but yeah, it starts to launch and then it gets to this infinite loading screen that's not like the one that the PC had, but one specific for the Steam Deck. It's like, no, this just wasn't ever updated to work properly on a Steam Deck. Yeah. It needs a lot of extra work that would make it work on the user end that I just did not want to do. So, but yeah, the game, still a lot of fun. I've done some of the side quests with the three local factions that are opposing the big dictator. So I have some places that my character will respawn when they die that are not the initial one you get. That would be full of a lot of narrative and exposition every time I die or crash and had to respawn. But yeah, that game's a lot of fun, just getting around the map and blowing stuff up in these different areas and liberating each of the little villages or military encampments and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's been fun to jump back into. And the other old game I've been playing is Diablo. It's been on Game Pass for the past couple of days. And the version that is here on Game Pass is kind of borderline unplayable for me as an old PC game. Because when I would open it up, it would have a big line down the middle of the screen. I think was the showing the area, like the resolution that the game runs in, essentially. Because if I had a had OBS up, like trying to capture the game, if I was, it would not be able to pull it. But if I had to do the display, so it would just show what the screen's showing. The game itself was showing in that view on like a quarter of the screen versus what I was seeing. It was stretched to the full screen. So I think the line I was seeing was how wide the game's actual resolution was stretching it. And so I could play it, but it'd be really annoying and would not be able to like record anything with it. So I had to do a lot of Googling and trying to figure out, because being an old PC game, it has no options for resolution or anything. And you would have to load into a save to even look at options, because it wasn't any on the main screen. And those are just like audio options, and that was about it. So I had to look around a bunch on the internet, see if I could find people with the same issue. And basically, there wasn't much help on that front to make it work. I had to essentially download a mod that made it work on modern PCs that is called Devolution X. And that's its own thing. It has a GitHub page for it that kind of essentially adjusts a lot of the menu stuff so that you can, you know, properly run it at a variety of resolutions. Whereas the original game was like, we only want to be in like 640 by 480 or, you know, 320 by 240. Something like that. And if you weren't to that, it probably would just freak out a bunch. It maybe works better if you got the GOG version that has fixes with it, I assume, that makes it work. But this is just the pure old games that don't exactly run super well on modern PCs, and it's technically running it out of Battle.net. And so it's like, this is very frustrating to have this as the experience there, shoving into people's faces.
Yeah.
As a game that is almost 20 years old.
Yeah.
I think it was January 1997 that it came out, so it's 18 years old at this point. So, but yeah, I got the Devolution stuff working, and you essentially launch the Devolution as the executable instead of Diablo. So from there, you get a ton of options, resolution options, you get a lot of quality of life stuff. Telling like, here, put in XP bar so I can see how close I am to leveling up. You know, put names of the enemies on health bars, that kind of stuff, or, you know, make it easier to see like what these enemies are, all that kind of stuff. Ability to remap controls, all kinds of stuff. As well as it includes the Hellfire expansion, and yeah, it's I played a couple hours of that, and yeah, it wasn't as tough as I was expecting it. I was playing on like the normal difficulty that basically kind of walk around your town. You got a handful of people that have different things to offer you. There's, you know, a blacksmith that'll repair your weapons and buy stuff from you or sell you specific items. You got a healer. There's a tavern guy that just mainly gives you quests. There's a lady that runs not a shop, but she manages like storage There's a, I think a witch that does your magic items. But I have a wizard or a warrior, so not really doing any magic stuff really. But yeah, you basically go down this dungeon that initially you find a guy that's dying, and he tells you, you know, ran into this creature called the Butcher. That's kind of your first quest. But I managed to run into it after doing some grinding. It was like maybe five or six, level five or six. Ran up to it because it's in this room where there's just a bunch of mutilated bodies. Because that's what the Butcher does. It captures people and just cuts them up and all that. And I opened up the door and tried to do some damage to it. And it just beat the shit out of me and I ran away. managed to get out, you know.
Common experience.
Yeah. But from that point, since the door was open, it was just roaming around on that floor. The interesting thing is I thought it would be randomized layouts every time I came back to the dungeon. But instead, it's kind of a... I assume it's a randomized layout, but it's static once you go in there.
Yeah.
The first time you go down, you start killing some enemies, opening up chests, and then you either fill up or you get low on health or whatever, and go back up, and then come back down. It's like, oh, this is all kind of the same. Here's where the dead bodies were, you know, blood spray or whatever.
Yeah.
An open chest. And it's like, okay, I guess I'll just explore and kind of open up all the areas around there. It's nothing really too complicated on any of that stuff. You know, just if you especially pull up the map screen that sits over the screen itself, it'll tell you, like, here's the doors, here's, you know, your pathways around, all that kind of stuff as you're moving around. And yeah, it's, you know, very bare bones Diablo experience. You know, you can see exactly where they evolved things for Diablo 2 and then made it more online focused with Diablo 3, and then kind of went full live service thing with Diablo 4 and like all the core things here. But yeah, you level up, you put skill points in, you just run around, grab your items. It depends on how you want to do it. You get, you know, down portal scrolls that let you set up a portal, go back to town, sell your stuff and heal up or whatever, then run back. But it seems like the randomized loot is, you know, a much more limited sense here, because it feels like the stats aren't all that different between weapons, though you might get some variances. But the first, like, blue items I got was pretty nice, though not all, you know, not always were super useful. But once you beat the Butcher, you get his axe. Big axe is the thing that you can use, which is pretty cool. And has like higher durability than any others. So the number is low for durability, but it wears down a lot slower than other weapons and armor and all that. So yeah, it's a pretty fun time. I don't know that I would keep playing it. Because yeah, it's just kind of, as I, you know, mentioned last week, like, it seemed like the comparison was that this was like Torchlight was, where you have, you know, a town of, you know, merchants and whatnots, and you go down a dungeon that is kind of never ending. But being a 1997 game, it probably has an end, but it's, you know, a set dungeon and that's kind of it. You're just kind of getting all the way to the end, get the loot you want, and then eventually, you know, start the expansion and do more of that, and then, you know, work your way up the other difficulties and all that. And yeah, it's one of those things, but it has a nice vibe to it, because you're dealing with these kind of darkish dungeons, and you kind of see figures kind of shifting about in the edges of your light, and you're like, oh, this does a good job of giving kind of creepy vibes. Though the music doesn't really help it too much, because there's times where it's like, oh, it's about to start like a metal song, but then it doesn't pick up into anything. Where you start hearing like the, you know, the start of a song, and it's like, oh, this just doesn't go anywhere, really. Probably because they didn't have a ton of room on the discs or whatever for music.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, because there is some general tunes there, but it doesn't have the metal vibe that you kind of expect out of later games
in the
franchise. But they do have like screams happening and that kind of stuff. I think the one scream is very much like one of those that's in the pack that you hear in movies and shows and such all the time. But yeah, it's a pretty cool game, but yeah, it's definitely one that you kind of have to go into with your awareness of how old it is and sort of where things would improve from there. But yeah, it's a pretty cool game. So yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, my gaming this week has largely been divided between, first off is a game for the PC, a really amazing, like, indie horror game, survival horror game called Sorry, We're Closed. And to compare this game to something, I would say the first thing when you open it up and play it, like, you're immediately thinking of, like, you know, the old school PS1, survival horror games. So, you know, Silent Hill, Resident Evil, because it's sort of, a lot of it is done in like a fixed third person view. And essentially, like, but that's, once you actually play it, it's like, it's one of the most wonderfully original games I've played in that genre in a while. Essentially what it is you're playing this woman named Michelle. She recently broke up with her girlfriend like 3 years ago. She's still not over it. And she's just sort of going through the motions where, you know, she has a job at a convenience store in somewhere in the middle of London. And she just sort of goes through the motion with that so that, you know, when that's over with, she can close up shop, go out and interact with her community, basically. And then one night while she's sleeping in bed, she is visited by what is, for lack of a better term, a sleep paralysis demon who calls itself the Duchess. And the Duchess basically declares, says, learn to fall in love with me or I will, you know, you will die and risk eternal damnation, that kind of thing. So when she wakes up, she suddenly discovers that, among other things, she now has a third eye, which allows her to sort of tear the veil between, you know, the living world and the underworld, for lack of a better term. Or the divine world, whatever you want to call it. And among other things, she discovers that pretty much everyone who lives in the borough that she lives in is either an angel or a demon. So, like, her best friend Robin turns out she's a demon. Turns out her boyfriend, the guy she's seeing, is an angel. The Duchess, of course, is also a demon. One of the girls, Clarissa, I think that's her name, or is it Marissa? I can't remember. Turns out she's also an angel. And basically, you know, even after that, you'll start, like, vaguely see, like, angelic shit, you know, like, spiritual shapes in the aether that once you get the third eye going, you can actually interact with them and talk with them. But the meat of the game involves you essentially going into the underworld, trying to find all of the Duchess's past, partners, for lack of a better term, and to get their third eye. And usually that involves going into these weird sort of twisted hellscapes that are sort of vaguely similar to wherever area she's in her borough at a given time. So, like, the first one basically involves her having to go into, like, an old subway tunnel. This is also where you get the, find out how, like, the combat in this game works. So, the combat in the game, you only have two weapons. You have a hatchet and you have a pistol. Except the hatchet is basically looks like it's been stitched together by a bunch of random creatures. And the pistol, it growls every time you feed new ammunition to it, and it has teeth. So, yeah. So all the combat in this game, even though it's a fixed third person game, the combat all happens in the first person. It's immobile when this happens. So when you go into first person, you can't move around. What this ends up doing is that because of this, every time you summon up your third eye, if there's any enemy in your immediate vicinity, that will reveal their weak point. And depending on how strong that particular enemy is, they might have more than one weak point that you'll have to shoot. And it's usually like in a succession. So like an old, like a fairly, shall we say, weak enemy will just have one. If you shoot it, you know, gone, it's dead. But for stronger enemies, there might be three, four, or even five that you have to shoot. And you're kind of on a timer because they're slowly coming towards you, getting ready to attack you as it's happening. And this is the same for bosses as well. The first boss I went up to was this huge, freaky-looking, rat-headed thing with, like, a split down the middle of its head, and so it had, like, a vertical mouth that would, like, close over and eat you and stuff. And, yeah, it's pretty fascinating game. It's not supposed to be terribly long, like, about 6 hours, but there's a lot that happens in that 6 hours, I'll tell you that much. And other than that, I've also been playing Hotline Miami 2. Now, I've played Hotline Miami 2 before. I never got very far in it because, well, anybody who's played the original Hotline Miami knows Hotline Miami, those games are particularly difficult. You know, you've only got one hit point that you can use. You know, you get hit, boom, you're dead. And you die a lot. And a lot of times you go in, you don't even have a weapon. You just have your fists. So you usually have to, you know, knock out the closest person to it, take their weapon, and then use that. And if you can do that in good time. Some things can change. In the original Hotline Miami, things would change around where, like, depending on what masks you were wearing, you might be able to get a dodge move, or you might be able to have a fist that'll be lethal, so lethal punches, or silent gunshots, because guns in this game, you know, they're loud, and so they obviously attract attention, which, you know, you can use to your advantage depending on what you're doing by, you know, luring people to their deaths or whatever. But Hotline Miami is hard. Hotline Miami 2 is doubly hard. It pretty much kicks you in the ass from the very beginning. And on top of that, you're not just playing the one character like you are in Hotline. Well, okay, technically two, but that's another thing. In Hotline Miami 2, you're playing a bunch of different characters, and they all play differently. Some of them will, like, start off with, like, their own weapon, with, like, a pistol with a suppressor on it. Or some of them will have, like, you know, they have the lethal fist thing where, yeah, they can kill with their punches, but it also means they can't pick up any weapons with it. There's one that operates as, like, a duo where one has a pistol, the other has a chainsaw. One guy, he just sort of roams around. He's got two SMGs that he just sort of dual wields. But yeah, that game is crazy hard, but also crazy fun, too. And honestly, I think I'm kind of finding it slightly easier going, because after having played Hotline Miami, the original, I kind of get sort of the tricks of how these games work. So it's slightly easier to play. I'm not going to be able to do, like, any of the speed challenges, though. I'm not nearly coordinated enough for that to work. But yeah, also, holy shit, the freaking soundtrack for this game is amazing. I mean, I was already a fan of, like, Perturbator and synthwave stuff in general, but damn, is it good. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So, Darren, what about you?
Yeah, I was away at Arkansas last week, so didn't really have much time to do much of anything except work. But aside from that, that also allowed me to pay more attention to my Switch, and the main game that I've been playing is Ace Memoir, The Oath in Thorgana. I know that Chris talked at length about it last week, and you've been streamed it. And yeah, not a whole lot I have to add, although I did beat it this morning. And if this is something that he already mentioned, apologies. But this game is hard. It does have a reputation of being one of the hardest, if not the hardest game in the series. And It is just a mixed bag as to why it's so difficult. You know, normally with games like this, I just, like, plow through all the enemies that I see. But as I got towards the last two dungeons, you know, I just got to a point where, all right, I'm tired of getting my ass handed to me. I'm just going to run away and jump away and try to get to the end. And if I can't beat any bosses, then I'll just go ahead and level up. Yeah. And aside from that, almost every boss I fought in this game, I died to consistently. And the main reason why I beat it was because Falcom is nice to a point where if a boss kills you enough times, you'll be able to play it at an easier difficulty, and then after you beat it, it'll go back to where you were. So I've been playing on normal mode, and yeah, so the main reason why I found it difficult, aside from things like, just a lack of skill, was because I just found the controls to be a little bit archaic, primarily on the on Switch handheld mode. I did not play the game on console, so I don't know how different it feels on controller. But the controls are fairly simplistic. You attack with the A button, you jump with the B button. Your X button allows you to use your limit break or special, whatever it may be, and then the Y button allows you to use a special move that you have equipped. And then there's like four in the game. The first one you get is a fireball. The next one is a cyclone tornado move, similar to, holding B with Link in any Zelda game. And then the next one is a what's it called? It's sort of an earth rush move. It's pretty much a spear or tackle. So yeah, those are, I think I mentioned, I think I said there's four, so there's really three. And you pretty much just cycle through those using the R button. But it would have been nice if there was an ability to just use the right stick in order to choose one, because, a lot of these were mapped pretty chaotically. And if I'm doing things like holding the button to, charge it and have more power, it was really easy for me to also accidentally press the R button, so I'd end up using moves that I didn't intend to do, which led to my death. But luckily, if you're in a dungeon and you die while you're exploring it, you're actually respawning on that specific screen, so you don't have to worry about, respawning at the last save point or things like that. It only gets archaic in the very end because a lot of the screens to go through in the dungeons are really, really long. And there was a point where I kept respawning with like 5 HP left, and I didn't realize that I had a power up with me that allowed me to just regain my energy as long as I just stand there after using one of my limit break moves. So it's a good thing that I figured that out. But yeah, like aside from its difficulty, the story is pretty simplistic as well. Basically, you travel to Felghana because there's some stuff going on there, and it turns out that island, or wherever you are, is where Dogi grew up. Dogi being your blue-haired companion who's really, really buff. That's all that's really said about him. I believe there's only like two games in the whole series where you actually use him. So, as far as like that goes, I wasn't really attached because I knew that I wouldn't get to use him much anyway. But this is a game that, I feel like could have been a whole lot better if you actually did get to use him, because, obviously him being from Felghana definitely adds to the story there. And him telling you about what he did doesn't have the same impact as you seeing it or you controlling it. And it felt a little bit disjointed in that regard. But aside from that, I really enjoyed what they were able to do with this remake. Noted that I never played the original or the PSP or PC version, so I went in completely blind. But a lot of the characters are cool. You come across Elena, who is like, the main maiden of like the main town you're in, and it turns out that her brother has been lost for 6 months, and it turns out you find him and he's evil. I'm not going to say more than that because it's spoilers, even though we're talking about an almost 20-year-old game here. But yeah, like as far as the story goes, it was pretty cool. There are some twists and turns in there that are both Falcom-y and old school RPG-y. Like some of the like the one the biggest plot twist, I wouldn't say is expected, but it feels like it's a twist just for the sake of being a twist. Like you find out that someone is bad that you wouldn't realize because it makes no sense, but yeah, like that's basically the way I felt about it. After beating it, you get access to things like art and all the cutscenes in the game, and you also get access to a prologue. Or actually, I don't know if that was already in the game, but if you were to get the game, I totally recommend watching the prologue because it actually tells you why you're going to Felghana. Like when you first start the game blind, you're just Adol. You're going on some adventure. But not knowing why you're there, aside from the fact that Dogi lives there, kind of takes away from it. Like it turns out that you're actually there because Felghana was struggling with trade because a lot of their resources were tainted or just, not as good as it used to be. And that's because a lot of stuff was happening environmentally because of all the bad stuff happening in the game that you'll learn in the plot. So, yeah, as far as that goes, I really enjoyed it. This is actually the first 2D East game that I've actually completed because my first one was actually East 8, Lacrimosa of Donna. And then after that, I beat 9, I beat 10. And yeah, coming back to this was pretty awesome. And yeah, if you're someone who's trying to play the East games in a chronological order, they are a little bit interesting. Like, as far as action RPGs go, this is similar to Zelda in the sense where you don't really have to play it in any sort of order. This Adol Kristen is the same guy throughout, but at the same time, like, it's told in such a way where it always begins about him being this legendary guy who's had so many adventures, and the adventures he had are going to be different based on who you talk to. And I've always enjoyed that about it because I feel no pressure to, play specific games in the series aside from knowing how good they actually were. But, that being said, the way it goes is East Origin is first, East 1 and 2 is second, East 10 Nordics, which was, the one that came out last year, was third, and then Memories of Celceta, and then Oathen Fallganna. So you're chronologically looking at the fifth game in the series, but at the end of the day, you don't really have to know. You don't have to worry about that. A lot is made about Adol's age. I don't personally feel that he's been any more or less mature than in any other game they've played, because at the end of the day, you're just going on an adventure or getting shipwrecked or whatever it may be. But yeah, this is definitely a fun one. I believe the special edition was like $60 on Switch, and like the rest of them are sort of budget priced. So if you're looking for a good RPG, that's also super challenging, I totally recommend this one. And the best part about it is it's only 12 hours, so it's a pretty quick play, especially compared to other Falcom games. And yeah, it's a good start to the year for Falcom because we're looking at maybe five or six games coming out of them this year, even though some are just going to be translations. We have this one that just came out. We have Trails Through Daybreak 2 coming out next month. East versus Trails in the Sky Alternative Saga, which is a port of their PSP crossover fighting game, is coming out sometime this year. We don't know yet. That's being published by, I think, something Refit. Like, they're a publisher I've never heard of before. Trails in the Sky First Chapter, which is a remake of the very first Trails game, is coming out sometime this year, and that's being published by Gung Ho. And Gung Ho is actually the publisher for a game we're going to talk about a little later. So yeah, it's going to be a big year for them. And then last December, they also announced East 10 Proud Nordics, which is kind of like an enhanced version of like last year's release. And then we also might get Tokyo Xanadu too. So yeah, it's a big year for Falcom, and this is definitely a great way to start it off. But yeah, aside from that, there are two games that I'm also playing that I can't talk about yet, but we'll get there soon enough. So that's been about it for me.
All right.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. And it is a
Yes.
new month for PS Plus, for the game catalog for Premium and Extra. So we'll talk about what they have coming up here on Tuesday. For Extra and Premium, we got first up God of War Ragnarok for
Freaking
PS4 and
finally.
PS5, so people can check that one out.
Yeah. God, I've been waiting on that one.
Yeah, it's a very good game.
Once I finally finished the first one, I was like, well, shit, now I got to play the second one. And yeah, it's just 'cause it's still like they're still selling that shit at full price. So I was like, crap, man, I'm going to have to wait till this is on PS Plus. And lo and behold, coming out Tuesday. So
So yeah, there's that. Let's see, for PS5 and PS4, Like a Dragon: Gaiden, the man who erased his name. The sort of side story that goes between the two Like a Dragon games, the two RPGs, though it's not an RPG itself, dealing with what Kazuma Kiryu's been doing, which includes him faking his own death and trying to stay out of trouble, but as is often the case, trouble comes finding him anywhere he goes. So yeah. So yeah, that's on the shorter side for those games. So that's one you can check out and get through. Let's see, for PS5, there's Atlas Fallen, Reign of Sand. This is an action RPG. I played a bit of it when it came to Game Pass, and it's a pretty decent game. Big open world action RPG kind of game,
Yeah.
where you're going around fighting enemies and doing quests and all this kind of stuff. It's had a bunch of work done to it to make it a bit better than what the original was. So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's a pretty solid time for what I've seen. So there's that. For PS5 and PS4, SD Gundam Battle Alliance. This is, I believe, the action RPG Gundam game that takes place in the G universe.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of the smaller Gundams,
Yep.
looking Gundams at least. So yeah, you can play that, get some loot and XP and all that. Play up with up to two other players. So that one's a solid game there. For PS4, Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Yeah.
That is a very good game.
Oh,
It's one
yeah.
I really liked. It is a I would say it's a rhythm game, but with a lot of like. Let's say the different tracks are kind of different types of stages. You have one stage where you're riding motorcycles around, one where you're skateboarding, dance battling, shooting lasers, you got swords, and a bunch of other stuff going on. So yeah, you're like a team of women that are the Wild Hearts, kind of doing stuff. So yeah, it's very well done. It's like a like a pop music kind of game. So that one's cool. For PS5 and PS4, there's Anno Mutationem, which is kind of a, I think a, I want to say it's a Metroid-y kind of game, but maybe not. Described as action adventure with RPG elements. This is one of those that has a very anime style to it. And like maybe a more low res kind of pixel kind of looking game, something like that. I look at the page for this real quick. Yeah, no, that yeah, that's the game I was thinking of, where it's kind of a lot of pixel art style kind of stuff, but in 3D environments in like a cyberpunk kind of world. That looks pretty cool. So that's one you can check out for PS5 and PS4, Orcs Must Die 3, which is their kind of a tower defense-ish kind of game, where you're setting up traps in these dungeons and such, and fighting orcs and all that, and trying to get the right setups and all that kind of stuff to take them out. So yeah, that's one you can check out. And then for PS5 and PS4, Citizen Sleeper. This is a game I played a good bit on the on Xbox Game Pass, and that is a very good game if you like your story. Because you're basically, it's set in like a cyberpunk kind of future where you are a sleeper, which is sort of a person that has sold themselves to pay off debts, and their soul has been put into a robot body, like a humanoid robot body that's kind of breaks down unless you get a certain drug every so often. So that's like their means of keeping you in slavery essentially. And so yeah, it's kind of designed like a tabletop RPG, where you're kind of looking at this board of places to go, and you have so many like points to spend in one day, and you're usually trying to accomplish things, and it kind of changes up the story a bit. Though I don't know how much variance there is on that, because you're like trying to do things for certain people, and you can spend your dice that you get on that stuff, but there's also like an alternate place you're hacking for, like specific kinds of currency that you use to spend on things. It's a fairly bit complicated, but once you kind of get your head wrapped around it, it's a pretty cool game. As you have the sequels out pretty soon, so there's a chance to play the first game for that. So there you go for that one. And then for PS4, the last one here, Poker Club. This is just a poker game. So yeah, you can play online, I believe, as well as probably local play and all that. So yeah, it's normal poker. It's not fucked up poker like Balatro. So,
yeah.
If you want your normie poker, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see here. For premium, they have two games. They got their own Indiana Jones here, Indiana Jones and the Staff of Kings.
Yep.
This was a PS2 game that came out in 2009, so a very late PS2 game. But yeah, you'll be able to check that one out. Yeah, Searching for the Staff of Moses. So there you go for that. And then also for PS4 and PS5, Medieval 2.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check out the sequel to the PS1 classic. So
yep.
Got more spooky stuff with Sir Daniel Fortesque. So
yep.
There you go. And that's your lineup. Some pretty good stuff there. If there's anything that interests you, Brandon?
Well, obviously, like I mentioned, you know, God of War Ragnarok, that's the big one. Citizen Sleeper, I've already played that one. It is an amazing game, but it is kind of a slow burn because it's a little, it's a great game, but it's not really big as far as action is concerned. It's kind of closer to like how, you know, Disco Elysium is, in that it's a lot of, you know, dialogue and reading and stuff like that, but it's a good game. I'm probably going to get The Man Who Erased His Name at some point as well. That's about it as far as I can say.
How about you, Danner?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say there's a whole lot for me here, mainly because I've played a whole lot of these. Obviously, God of War Ragnarok was a heavy, you know, Game of the Year candidate the year it came out. And then Like a Dragon and Gaiden came out, I think, at the end of 2023. And I beat it. That was the first game I beat last year. I will say, though, Brandon, don't sleep on it too long, because this game was actually removed from Game Pass and put onto here. So I don't imagine it being on there for too long.
Yeah.
That being said, it's also like 8 to 10 hours. It's a really short game. Sayonara Wild Hearts is a game that I've had in my queue for a while and just like never touched. So I don't know if I'll jump into that. Citizen Sleeper does seem interesting. I know we had the sequel coming out at the end of the month, if not early next. And I've heard a lot of great things about that game. I just don't know if I'm at the mindset right now to dive into it, especially with what we have to look forward to and what I'm playing now. It's a solid release month. I don't have any complaints. And, you know, God of War Ragnarok is a great way to line that up.
Actually, now that I look at it, I might get Anno Mutationum as well. It actually looks really interesting.
Yeah. I definitely would recommend checking out Sayonara Wild Hearts. It's not super long game. It's like a couple hours. Because you're basically playing tracks for as long as the song lasts. So it's not really too long on those levels.
Mm-hmm.
Though getting good scores on them, that's the challenge. But if you want to just play through them real quick, then figure out if you want to play more, that's something you can do. That's a pretty good month there. Let's see what else we got here. The only game that we have a date for here that got announced is a Lunar Remastered Collection. Will be out April 18th on PS4, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. There'll be $49.99 for the collection of the two games. The physical versions will be $54.99. Looks like North America is exclusive through Amazon and Europe through Clear River Games for that. So, nice to see these two classic RPGs kind of that are always perpetually in states of not being available, and then gets like a remaster of some sort or port that makes it more available, and then that's it for a long time, and then they do it again. Kind of thing. So yeah, that's there's some good RPGs. I'd be interested in checking them out.
Yeah, I do want to check them out too. You got to understand, when these games originally were ported over here, they were in a very small number. It was really hard to get a hold of a copy of these, and so it's one of those games that kind of became a cult classic, partly because so many people were talking about it like it was this, this weird, like, mythical experience that only a select few could experience. Yeah, it was like that.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in an era where, you know, I would always see ads for that Silver Star Story.
Yeah.
In magazines and stuff, and like I just couldn't play it because I didn't own a PlayStation, and you know, it was my uncle and aunt that had them, and I'm not going to sell them to buy a video game when I don't own it. So it's kind of weird in that regard. But yeah, like I know a lot of people who started their, you know, fandom of RPGs because of this series, and I look forward to finally giving it a try and, you know, going from there. You know, when I talked about East a while ago and I talked about Falcom's big year, I did mention that Gung Ho is releasing another game, and this one is it. So I look forward to trying it out. It is kind of dumb that the physical edition is exclusively available on Amazon. So I don't know whether it's going to be hard to get just because, like, I know it's a niche, but at the same time, because it's a niche, it'll be limitedly produced. So I don't know. I just hope I'm able to get my hands on it and then going from there.
Yeah. I remember playing whatever re-release they did on the PSP. Back in the day, that I don't think lasted for too long. Yeah, Lunar Silver Star Harmony, which is the third remake of the first game, the Silver Star. So,
yeah,
that being a whole thing there.
Yep.
But yeah, that's cool. Looking forward to checking out this new version, kind of getting back into it. But yeah, let's see what else we got here. Little Gator Game.
Uh-huh.
They kind of announced out of the nowhere that they have a new expansion coming out later this year called In the Dark. That kind of takes you into some more cave-like environments. I assume that'll be full of like Goonies references.
Probably.
Of sorts. But yeah, I really like that. Original game, they're also putting out alongside the expansion a Gator of the Year edition. For PS5, Xbox, and Switch, that'll include the game and the expansion for people that want to check it out. And yeah, this is just a game that I really liked a lot. So looking forward to more of that. Let's see what else we got here. Rebel Wolves announced their debut game called The Blood of Dawnwalker.
Yes, they did. And it looks interesting.
Yeah, these are mostly devs that worked on The Witcher 3 and Cyberpunk 2077.
And it shows.
Yeah, very much. I saw people describing it as, what if The Witcher featured a vampire instead of, you know, a Witcher?
Which, pretty good description, I think.
Yeah. And it was fun to see the announcement of this, because the anti-woke crowd thought this is their savior moment, because, you know, this one's not going to have Ciri as the face of it like The Witcher 4. And then they found out one of the devs is queer. So now they're in shambles. Like, oh no, this was the chosen one and now it's not. That's fun. But yeah, this is, I don't think they have any sort of dates or anything. It's going to be a while still. But Bandai Namco's publishing this one. It's being made for Unreal Engine 5 for PS5, Xbox, Series X and S, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's currently in alpha with some more updates coming later this year, but yeah, it's looking pretty neat, and yeah, we'll have to see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely caught my interest, I'll tell you that. It looks very fascinating. And also the fact, unlike The Witcher and The Witcher series, this takes place in like the real world. It takes place in Carpathia. So, you know, it's in and around where Romania is, which, you know, because you're a vampire, you know, Romania, Transylvania.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be out later this year, but probably in a couple of years.
Yeah.
We'll see. Then we got this, 11-Bit Studios announced a new game that they're publishing called Death Howl. That is an interesting game that they describe as a Souls-like deck builder.
Yeah.
Which is a neat concept. They got a demo that's going to be out tomorrow. So I'm curious to check that one out, see how that goes. But yeah, 11-Bit Studios puts out a lot of interesting games. And this one looks pretty neat from what they've shown so far. I believe each battle is kind of goes on like a grid, like system where you have, it was just where you're using your cards and all that.
Yep.
Whereas out in the outside of combat, you're kind of exploring these environments, and the, you know, getting around this area. So yeah, and the story seems pretty neat too. So you're playing as, let's hear, you play as Ro, a grieving mother navigating an ethereal Stone Age Nordic inspired realm, a
Yep.
desperate quest to reunite with her departed son. Which is the rare game where you're playing as the mother that has lost a child versus a child that's lost a mother, or the dad who's lost a wife, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, that one's cool. That's probably be out later this year. We'll see, but there's that. Then we'll get to the biggest new thing that was announced. Nintendo finally confirmed that the their new console is a Switch 2, with a fancy CG trailer that seemed a little overproduced at times because it's just like, oh, here's a gray brick, and now we'll zoom around as it chisels out the power button and the exhaust stuff. And I was like, okay, you didn't need it to show this much, but they got a more flexible like kickstand that can almost go all the way back. They got they showed off like the Joy-Cons, which are, the whole thing is a bit bigger, maybe an inch or so, and the Joy-Cons are a little bit bigger as a result. And it seems like the top part of it on the Joy-Cons, like when you're using them individually, it seems like that's built out a bit more, to be a little more comfortable to use that way. And so you don't necessarily need the big plastic slip that that came with your Switch that you probably had put somewhere and never thought about it ever again.
Same.
And so they apparently have new ones here because they show some with the strap on it, as like the Joy-Cons are flying around. So they got that. But yeah, it's all black, which is a neat look compared to the original kind of Switches that were designed to be kind of two-toned with the Joy-Cons. Like the only color is under the analog sticks and the bits that plug into the sides of the tablet. So yeah, instead of rails, they have, I believe it was supposed to be like a magnetic thing that keeps it in place. What else? There's a weird button that has no thing on it. It's just a square button on the right Joy-Con that can maybe be used for whatever. There's also a button on the back, on the Joy-Cons on the back side, that I don't know if that's an actual button or some sort of release mechanism for the Joy-Cons or something. I don't know. But it seems like the triggers are still buttons and not any sort of triggers with a give to them, so that you have a range of motion in there. The shorter buttons seem to wrap around a bit more, but yeah, everything else kind of looks a lot of the same. There's no D-pad, it's still the same four directional buttons, plus minus. You get your green shot and home button. Analog sticks look pretty much the same to them. But yeah, it's just a bigger Switch, make games look a bit better. Maybe not like a PS5 game as people have been assuming. They did show a little bit of gameplay of a new Mario Kart, I think. And people are speculating it's like open world Mario Kart. And I was like, I don't know. Probably has bigger tracks, I assume, because they can do that instead of being a Wii U game. And Donkey Kong looks weird in it, as people have shown the pictures of. And it's like, I don't, it looks dopey, which is okay. That's Donkey Kong a lot of time. But yeah, that's kind of it. They're gonna have a direct to talk more about the Switch on April 2nd. They're gonna have events that start shortly after, where you can go to specific venues to see games for yourself. I'm trying to see where I can find the dates on that stuff. Because people have been like, when's it coming out? And it's like, well, there's these specific dates they mentioned for the events. And I was like, well, it can't be before all of those, you know, stop, which I think is in June. I think it starts like the week after the direct, every few weeks until June in different areas. So people are like, well, it can't come out until June. Like, oh, it can come out before then. It's not like everybody's going to be able to buy it before then. But yeah, largely everything's the same. I do find it funny. The logo is the Switch logo of the two different colored Joy-Cons with the two next to it. Then Nintendo Switch under that. So that's a that's a fun thing. So yeah, they also do make sure to mention that you can play your Switch games on this Nintendo Switch too.
Yep, it's backwards compatible
With both physical and digital games.
Yep.
So I'm curious sort of how they are going to allow for more storage on a cartridge, because that's been an issue for them in the past in making bigger cartridges, or at least higher storage cartridges that are a reasonable price, which is why a lot of bigger games tend to make you download good chunks of it, because they don't want to pay for a higher priced card. So yeah, that seems to be largely it. It's a teaser that leaves you with a lot of questions, to which they're like, we're not going to tell you a damn thing for 2.5 months.
It's like, stop asking. Here you go. Now leave us alone.
Which is the absolute wrong approach, because everybody's instantly like, well, what the fuck is this? What is this? What is that?
Yeah.
Why are these moving around? Is that a mouse-like thing I think people are suggesting? And I was like, what the fuck does that mean for games? So I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff to it, but yeah, so what do you think, Brandon?
I will say the one thing that I do like better than the original model is the way the Joy-Con sort of snap in from the side instead of just, you know, sliding them in like the original. Hopefully that means that like Joy-Con drift won't be a major issue this time around. Because I've had problems with that myself. And it's definitely annoying. Really, other than that, though, I really just kind of need to see more.
Yeah, how about you, Dinner?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this was the biggest news of the week, right? But also, like, if you've been following the leaks, nothing here was news at all. You know, as for my opinion of everything, like, obviously, like, Nintendo was... They've been at a point where they sort of lost control of the whole situation, which is, you know, not usually their MO. They're usually in complete control of these, especially after the last couple Nintendo Directs, where it seems like they've gotten rid of their leak problem, and all of a sudden, like, you have a third-party, unofficial distributor of accessories, like, just go haywire with all this stuff, you know, announcing pretty much everything here, and then even focusing on this supposed C button, which we know exists, but it looks like Nintendo buffed it out in the video reveal, so we don't know what it's going to do, but I also don't imagine that changing gameplay much. But yeah, like, you know, the main thing that we've needed from Nintendo ever since the rumors of the Switch Pro was we just needed a more powerful Switch, and this is going to be it. And like Brandon, like, for me, it's going to be all about the games. Like, it's nice that we have bigger Joy-Cons. I don't know if I like the snap-on approach of the Joy-Cons more than the sliding, because I feel like the sliding mechanism made things easier to take the Joy-Cons off when the Switch is docked. I don't know how easy it'll be doing that when it's docked on the Switch too, but I'd imagine it'll be easier. I believe they did this as a way to both combat Joy-Con drift as well as, like, breaking it. But it's also weird, right? Because, you know, you see the middle have this, like, almost cartridge slot kind of thing, which can seem as breakable as an HDMI, because those break all the time. But maybe the magnets at the top and bottom prevent you from that. I don't know. It's more of a, I'll wait till I see it. Unfortunately, when the event comes to LA, I'll be elsewhere, so I won't be able to, like, play it at one of these events. So, yeah, we're just going to have to wait. The other interesting thing is, I don't remember the initial trailer of what the Switch can do, and then all of a sudden, you know, their Switch event happening to like talk about the release date and the price and stuff. So I don't know how early they announced that latter event. It is interesting that they announced a Nintendo Direct for April 2nd because yeah, that's quite a bit of time from now. That's also after Pokemon Day, and Nintendo and Pokemon Company always have something. So it's going to be weird if, you know, Pokemon Day comes and goes and then they don't at least mention the Switch 2 because we know that's coming. At this point, games like Metroid Prime 2 and Pokemon Legends ZA or AZ, I don't even know what it's called, are at a point where, you know, am I going to get on Switch 1? Am I going to get it on Switch 2? I don't know. Like, obviously, like, you know, for core gamers like us, we're going to want it on the newest hardware if we have it. But if you want to sell this to, like, mom and pop or grandma, like there's no reason to buy a game for a platform that you don't have yet, and you might as well just wait for Christmas for it. So yeah, you know, until April there isn't going to be much to say until we see something. One thing that I did like as far as like, you know, with the Mario Kart stuff we saw was that there were slots for 24 racers at the start line, and we saw 16 in gameplay. So I'm looking forward to, you know, at least seeing that kind of upgrade. And the carts also all look different. So if it's a real game, and I'm assuming it is, it looks like we'll see some nice changes.
So yeah, from what they've shown, I've seen people talk about pricing and all that, and I'm certain it's not going to be anything lower than $399 for this thing, because it seems like they're going all in, sort of a higher quality looking Switch, and they're still gonna and they're gonna still sell, you know, the Switch and the Switch OLED for a while still. I don't see them like going real cheap on this.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of the OLED, you know, there's been rumors that there won't be an OLED model at launch, and I'm gonna hold out hope that there will be, especially like with, yeah, like the way the current concept looks with the smaller bezel does look nice, but if it's not OLED, downgrading to LCD is just gonna be like a weird.
Yeah, though it'll look a lot better because the games and the resolution will be better capable than the Switch was, so it should be a thing that, you know, will look better regardless of what the screen is capable of showing. But yeah. So yeah, we'll have to see how things go and wait 2.5 months to see what else is going on with this thing. Yeah, there you go for that. That's your Nintendo news of the week, at least for now. We do got some more news here. And this one was pretty cool. This got shown in, I think, a direct recently, Promised Mascot Agency. That is a Japanese game coming from Kaizen Gameworks that is, as they describe here, an open world mascot management crime drama. A lot of visual novel stuff to it and all that, and it has a pretty cool voice cast here that they announced. The main character named Michi is voiced by Takeya Kuroda, who is also the voice of Kazuma Kiryu in the Yakuza and Like a Dragon games. Pinky is voiced by Ayano Shibuya, who's known as Pura in The Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom. These are all the Japanese voice actors. If you didn't know, Matriarch Shimazu is voiced by Eri Saito, who's in Chainsaw Man, Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots, and Way of the Samurai 3. And then you start getting some of the cool characters. I got Mono Gay is voiced by Shuhei Yoshida, who just left Sony the other day. So that's cool for him. Then Kanushi-kun, voiced by Hidetaka Suerhiro, otherwise known as Swery. So that's cool. And yeah, they have more to announce at a later date. But yeah, that's a pretty cool cast of voice actors and then a couple of industry figures in Japan, which is pretty cool. But yeah, that'll be out later this year on PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So yeah, that's one to keep an eye out on for that. But yeah, as mentioned, let's see, we got some industry news here. The developer behind this fairly popular Steam early access game called Fortune's Run,
Yeah.
has announced that she will be pausing development for a while because she's going to prison.
Yep.
I think for 3 years, I think she said. Announced on Tuesday that her past before getting into game development was a one that was very fraught with issues and such. Saying here, I've been sentenced to prison for the next 3 years. It's a long story, but I've lived a very different life before I was a game developer. I wasn't living very well. My case is about 5 years old now. I've been going through the legal process the whole time I've been working on this. I have finally been found guilty and sentenced, and I'm going away next month. And it's like, boy, I've not heard of an excuse like this in a long time. So, hats off to them. Wish them the best of luck. But I assume the game will, as far as it's sold, is probably done well enough that they'll at least have a nest egg to come back to. Not sure what they're going to do with it as they're in prison, but that's one of those announcements that's like, boy, was not expecting to hear this. So yeah, there you go. One of the wildest excuses I've ever heard.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hell of an excuse. Yeah. Can't finish the game because I'm going into the clink for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I do enjoy the transparency though.
Yeah.
I don't know what they did, but cool. Hopefully when the person gets back, it's a game that is worth playing. But yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a thing.
Yep.
Let's see. Let's move on to less egregious issues, but still issues. Nintendo in the Donkey Kong Country Returns HD game, which was originally made by Retro Studios, has omitted all of the original devs from the remaster's credits. So it's all the new team that has been working on it, and nobody from Retro, which is a thing that they've done plenty of times before, and it sucks every single time. Because you wouldn't have this game without the people that made it at Retro, much less anybody. It's not like they're on bad terms with Retro. They're working on the current Metroid Prime 4, so there's no real reason they couldn't have done this, but kind of their MO to not credit people for games they didn't actively work on, even though it's a project they made in the past. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. There is obviously like nothing good for it, but at the same time, it's like we can chastise them to no end. I don't even know if buying or not buying games is gonna, solve this problem. But yeah, it definitely sucks. Especially being in the industry, I've seen or I've actually been a part of staffs where, they'll put you on the list just because like you serve coffee one day like. All that stuff matters. It's great to have games on your resume, and there's no proof that these people have it on their resume, and that sucks.
Yeah. And it's like this is a game that is essentially getting remastered for the third time or the second time. There's no reason not to include all the people that worked on it. Even if it's not even part of the credits you get at the end of the game, if it's just a menu option to look at those credits. But yeah, it seems like they're just credited as based on the work of the original development staff. I was just like, okay, that's not great, but you know what? That's how Nintendo does business. And it sucks. But yeah, there's that. And some more news. More good news out of BioWare. The director of Dragon Age: The Veilguard, Corinne Bush, is leaving the studio. She's been there for almost two
Twenty
decades.
years,
Started in 2006, so yeah, we'll be just short of that, but yeah, we'll be working on supposedly a new RPG with some other people. But yeah, she was creative director on Dragon Age: The Veilguard. I don't know if this is anything like she's being pushed out for any real problems, just probably wanted to do some new stuff.
It's possible.
especially for a franchise she's probably worked on since the start.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's sad, but Dragon Age Veilguard, obviously, because of the culture war bullshit, it got a lot of heat and stuff. The game still sold fairly well, so it's not like, it was necessarily for sales reasons. I'm pretty sure she was just ready to do something else at this point.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that.
Yeah, I mean, I really wouldn't know what to add here either. I mean, she has been at EA for a long time, and that's hard in its own right. I personally don't know who she is, but I also don't have any real connection to the series. But at the same time, like, people leave to, pursue other interests in and out of gaming, and hopefully wherever she goes next, she's valued.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like EA, I mean, no one said anything, but I doubt anybody at EA told her to leave.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. Let's see. We got some news out of Sony. Reports that they have canceled two of the live service games they had in the works. Mm. Seems this involves Bend Studio and Blue Point Games.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was a God of War live service game. And the other was, what was it? God of War, and then, yeah, that was the Blue Point game. Yeah, what was the other one? But not sure where it's mentioned here what the other one specifically was. But yeah, it's interesting to see that at least they're kind of going back to be more, critical of these games and see if they're going to really live up to the amount of work that needs to go into finishing them up and get them out there versus, mm-hmm. Having more games that go like Concord that just kind of hit in a dud kind of way, no matter how good or interesting they are. It's better to cancel them now and put the team on other things than, to have them finish it and make it seem like a huge waste of money. So yeah, that's a shame. Hopefully there are no layoffs as a result of this stuff, but I would assume these are studios that have other things they can work on, hopefully. Be able to put those people onto that stuff, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, that's some sad news there. The kind of one's interesting. I think was it God of War Absolution? I think it was the last PS3 game in the series that had a multiplayer mode in it. That was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
For what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too surprised that they tried to spin something up that could be more either multiplayer or co-op focused that could work out pretty well, but yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that it didn't work out.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with Concord and we know this in general, like getting into live service games, especially as a console company, is really, really hard.
Oh yeah.
I don't know who in their right mind there decided to say, hey, live service is the way to go because they make this much. A lot of the more popular games, Titanfall, Overwatch, they've seen their numbers go down. There is no reason why PlayStation can go ahead and enter and all of a sudden have something that goes right up. And when you have something like Last of Us canceled, and now all of a sudden we're hearing a God of War live service game, which I don't even know how you make successful with the characters they have because there aren't too many at all. And then Bend, we've been wondering what Bend and Blue Point have been working on for quite a while, because those aren't nothing studios. They make some meaningful stuff, and a lot of people are excited for whatever Blue Point is doing next. So I hope that these studios weren't primarily working on this live service stuff, because we know that there's a whole lot of talented people there, and hopefully it doesn't lead to any layoffs, because we know what they're capable of, and doing a live service game that they're not known for is a bigger risk than you would, hope to see them try to take. And, not everything can be Helldivers, and even that is seeing lower numbers, so it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll see how there's any fallout on that front. But yeah, let's get to our next story here. Microsoft has laid off a small number of people across its various divisions, which includes the Xbox division.
Yep.
I don't believe it's anything like the 1,900 employees they laid off last year at this point, but
yeah,
I imagine it's a similar reasoning for that, as far as like laying off people, going into, you know, a new quarter, free up positions that they could hire new people in at less money and save, you know, some money yeah. as a result. So yeah, that's and the way they describe this is very tech industry kind of thing of describing them as targeting underperforming employees. Because these kind of companies love to have like performance metrics on this kind of stuff, and they call like the bottom X percent every so often to be like kind of get everybody working harder, I guess. Which is stupid because it's those numbers could be for any number of reasons. Based on what sort of tasks they're trying to do, or whether they have, you know, vacation time they're using, or whatever could be causing them to lose their numbers, as it were. So yeah, some disappointing news there.
Yeah,
but luckily no studios or anything. I don't think there's any real details on like what studios or anything saw layoffs in this, but yeah. Still not great.
Yep. Yeah, sucks, but it's to be expected in this current state of the industry.
Yeah. But we'll get to a story here that's actually pretty good. Future Lab announced that they are stopping support for Powerwash Simulator VR. Which is not a huge surprise to me. But also saying that there's not going to be any layoffs because they're being, moved over to other open positions in the studio, work on other projects. So, yeah, it's not a huge surprise that this did not necessarily do well enough to deserve further investment from the studio, because this was very much a Meta exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume they... Meta paid for this, and you know that probably denoted for X amount of time to work on it for exclusivity and all that. And yeah, Meta VR stuff is one of those things where it's either goes really well or it doesn't. It seems like this game was perfectly fine and all that, but it was probably not the platform for this game. If it was on Steam VR, it's more accessible in that sense, as well as PlayStation VR 2. I think this probably would have done a good bit better, because I remember when they announced this version, and very much the Discord for the game very much had a lot of questions like, well, when's it coming to PSVR 2? Mm-hmm. When's it coming to PSVR 2? You know, is this going to be exclusive forever? And they very much could not answer that stuff. I assume that was part of the exclusivity, to not mention any other platforms, and yeah, ended up not happening. And yeah, I think it definitely is part of a reason, but and it seems like it did not do well enough to deserve more of their time and attention to that platform, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, as the CEO Chris or Kirsty Rigdon.
Mm-hmm.
Announced here. Here's her statement on Twitter. Basically saying, I am so sorry to let you know that we won't be continuing support of Powerwash Simulator VR. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love and believe in VR, so this doesn't mean that we won't support it in the future, but we aren't able to continue with support right now. We've been faced with a crossroads. We have a truly excellent and kind VR team who are working on a platform which costs us more than it makes, while also having a list of job openings that we're looking forward to be filled. We're looking to be filled on other projects. We took the decision to redeploy our VR team into those other projects and roles. While I would love to live in a world where we could support Powerwash Simulator on every platform going, I will always choose job security for my team every time. While I know that you must be so disappointed, I also know that if you were in my position, you would have made the same decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they've also clarified that, you know, the VR game and all the DLC that's already on it is going to be fine. They're not taking anything down. But yeah, it seems to be a lot of positive response for being open and also being clear that they are not laying people off as a result of this. So,
nope.
That's the great news there is like, we've decided not to do this, continue this project, but we are not going to lay people off as a result because we have ways to better use their talents inside the studio and put them on other projects. So that's like the best part of that. So yeah, a little bit of sad news, but I think ultimately positive news to not have layoffs, especially for a small team like that.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, on the one hand, it's sad that, you know, that game won't really get any more support. But on the other hand, you know, it's a good thing that, you know, they're making sure that they don't have to lay anyone off because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously Power Wash Simulator is a, you know, powerful game and IP. And like, you know, not to say anything against VR, but I don't think that game was profitable to begin with. I mean, the industry itself is not profitable, so... stuff.
Yeah.
But
every other version seems to be doing pretty well, especially with the continued support with the Wallace and Gromit DLC that's coming out in the near future. Mm-hmm. So that'll be fun. And we'll end here on another positive note. Awesome Games Done Quick just happened a week or so ago. They wrapped up and announced that they had reached $2.56 million for the Prevent Cancer Foundation. Very good week of streams from the 5th to the 12th. I watched a decent bit of these. There's some really cool ones in there.
Mm-hmm.
The ones I saw was like one of the really cool ones was a Rocket League one, using the community maps that people can make. A bunch of them make essentially a bunch of platforming challenges, and it was a speed run of those. It was also partly a demonstration of a lot of the cool maps that people were making, because a handful of the ones they showed were ones that were not out yet, that people were still working on. And so, yeah, it was some really cool stuff there. There's a really cool Crazy Taxi one that had a band that was playing the Offspring music while they were doing that.
Oh yeah.
That was a really fun one. There's one that was playing Mario, one of the Mario Brothers games with a piano.
Mm-hmm.
Or he was playing piano while he was using like a head motion controller that he used for that to control the game. So he was like moving his head around as he was playing piano, essentially Mario music to the game. What else did I see there? There's a really cool Big Rigs run. If you know your PC gaming history, Big Rigs was a racing game that, you know, you raced in semi-trucks. That is an incredibly bad game. Basically was released unfinished. So the speed run essentially happens is that you turn around and you drive backwards because the speed can just kind of infinitely increase over, you know, the few minutes that the track is designed for.
Mm-hmm.
And you can essentially just drive out of bounds if you know where your checkpoints are at. So that one's really cool. And there's also a cool Tetris Grandmaster race where they had four people playing this arcade Tetris game that is kind of wild. Let's see, and then they played, I think, 2 and 3, one of which was on the Arcade Archives games, so I could play it on console, but I think 3 is still on the arcade machine, so they're playing that locally and all that, and yeah, there's a bunch of cool ones there, so those are worth checking out, especially usually your hosts are pretty well at well-versed in talking about all the tricks they have to do. For the ways they skip chunks of the game. There was a cool Ratchet and Clank Going Commando one that was talking about it. It was 100% So they had to play through it once and then do the new game plus to get the rest of the stuff they needed. And there's like weird elements of the PS3 remaster that they take advantage of that essentially let them change variables in the game so that they can, you know, upgrade weapons with a matter of like one or two hits pretty quickly. So yeah, there's a lot of fun races and speed runs and such that are really well done. So yeah, that's a cool event. Always fun checking out sort of what they have there and seeing games you're familiar with that you played normally, and then see what the speedrunners have figured out, ways of just skipping large chunks of the content and all that. And yeah, it's a fun event.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's going to do it for the show this week.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you all for tuning in, and thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
No worries. We'll
be back next week with a new slate of news as the month of January nearly ends. This will be the last show of the month next week. And we'll be all going through a polar vortex of freezing. So
it'll
be a good time to stay inside and play some games.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also going to stay inside and not go out in temperatures, at least here, that are going to be in the negative 20 degree range. That'll be fun. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
Yeah.